You little bitch! Before Gregor really knew what he was doing, his hand was shooting out to grab her by the throat. He hadn't even got close before Investigator Razor's hand shot out to intercept his. Gregor's pudgy white hand disappeared entirely inside Razor's big black fist, and Gregor cried out as Razor clamped down hard, grinding the bones of Gregor's hand together. He let go after a long moment, and Gregor fell back a step, clutching his throbbing hand to his breast. Bibi Chojiro and her investigator studied him with the same impersonal gaze as he stood before them, trembling with impotent rage.
"Turn around and go back to your own people, Shrek."
Razor didn't raise his voice. He didn't have to.
"You have no business here."
Gregor glared at them both, searching for some final insult or a threat that he could use to crush them. But in the end, he had to turn silently and trudge back through the snow again. People moved even faster to get out of his way this time, giving him the same kind of respect one would a maddened scorpion that might strike out at anyone just for being there. Gregor was actually thinking too hard to bother about that. He had to find allies and support from somewhere, or he might easily find himself being edged out of the starship business altogether. Anyone could build shells. His alliance with the church should bring long-term benefits, but right now he needed the money. He'd find someone. There was always someone. And when he was a power again in his own right, he'd make Bibi Chojiro pay for daring to humiliate him. He made himself breathe more slowly. There was still latitude with Clan Wolf. Maybe Valentine wouldn't deal, but Daniel and Stephanie just might, if approached in the right way. They might work with him, just to spite their brother. Yes, that was an idea. He slowed his pace and allowed himself a small smile. He would be strong again and have his revenges upon his enemies, and no one would dare look down on him again. Limestone finally waved the people arguing before her to silence and called the court to order. Her amplified voice echoed across the Arctic waste, cutting effortlessly through the courtier's babble of voices. Lionstone glared down at Valentine and Beatrice until they got the message, bowed, and faded back into the crowd. General Beckett and Cardinal Kasser moved to stand on each side of the Iron Throne, staring out at the courtiers, representing army and church, the arms of the Empress. Lionstone nodded to Beckett, and he raised his voice in a parade ground bark.
"Captain Silence, Investigator Frost, and Security Officer Stelmach, step forward and make your report on the alien attack."
Stelmach jumped guiltily and then looked around quickly to see if anyone had noticed. Silence and Frost just strode forward, not looking around, until they stood at attention before the Iron Throne. He waited a moment for Stelmach to join them, and then realized the security officer had stopped on the edge of the crowd, his eyes fixed on the Grendel alien standing just before the throne. Silence didn't blame him. The bloody thing disturbed the hell out of him, too. He reached back and pulled Stelmach forward to stand beside him. The security officer's eyes never left the alien. Silence glanced at Frost and wished he hadn't. The investigator was staring at the alien hungrily, only a moment away from attacking the thing on general principles. Silence considered the matter, then reached out and pulled Frost back a step. The alien was the Empress's pet, and if by some miracle Frost actually did manage to kill the bloody thing, Lionstone would not be at all happy. Frost pulled her arm free immediately and glared at him, but stayed where she was. Silence decided to start his report before something unpleasant happened. He kept it simple and succinct, but hit all the salient points. There was a lot of uneasy murmuring from the assembled court as he described what he'd found in the wrecked base on Gehenna. He told how the Dauntless tracked the alien ship to Golgotha, and then the murmurs got really loud when he described the alien craft's nature and capabilities and the life forms he'd found inside it. He let Frost take over from there. She was the expert on aliens. Her report was cold, factual, even clinical. But Silence was shivering along with everyone else by the time she'd finished, and it didn't have a damn thing to do with the cold. After she'd finished, it was very quiet. The Empress nodded slowly and looked out over the court again.
Perhaps now you appreciate our position on the necessity for increased military spending. If one alien ship can do so much, what might a fleet accomplish? We have heard whispers of late of a proposed revolt against the new tax increases. Let us make it clear that any such treachery will be put down harshly, with every resource at our disposal. In the current circumstances, refusal to support the military can only be seen as treason against humanity.
General Beckett smiled. Cardinal Kasser did not. The Empress looked at Stelmach.
Do you have anything to add at this time?
Stelmach swallowed hard, shook his head quickly, and finally managed a very quiet...
Not at this time, Your Majesty. No.
Very well. Guards, bring the prisoner forward.
The middle of the crowd quickly parted to form a narrow aisle through which two armed guards half-led and half-dragged a naked man through the deep snow. He wore only wrist and ankle chains and some blood that had spattered down onto his chest from his recently broken nose. His skin was a bluish-white, and he shuddered uncontrollably in the biting cold. The guards threw him on his knees before the Iron Throne. He looked up at Lionstone pleadingly and tried to say something, but he was shaking so much he couldn't get the words out. Lionstone looked down at him thoughtfully.
This pathetic object is Frederick Hill, head of Starport Security here on Golgotha. We gave him the appointment ourselves. We thought he showed promise. This man let the rebels in, allowed them to sabotage the tax and tithe headquarters, and failed to prevent them from lowering the planet's defenses as they escaped. He also failed to protect us from the alien ship. We could question him on this, but what's the point? He'd just nod and smile and agree with everything we said, and then try to pass the blame onto his staff or hidden traitors or lack of the right equipment. Anything but himself. After all, he'd say the rebels arrived in a Haydenman ship. Probably half his people took one look at the great golden ship of awful legend and ran for their lives, and the other half probably followed them once the alien ship swept past our non-existent defenses to strafe the city. It doesn't make any difference. He was head of Starport Security, responsible for our defense. A strong man in that position might have accomplished much. He might have pulled enough of his people together to organize equipment repairs, bring secondary and backup systems online, send out rescue teams to aid the wounded and distressed in the city. Instead, according to his own security records, he dithered and fumbled and finally hid, reemerging only when it was all safely over. Quite unacceptable behavior from one of our officers. We have therefore decided that an example shall be made.
She looked back at the Grendel alien, and after a moment, everyone else did too. It stood calm and relaxed behind the throne, a living nightmare in spiked crimson silicon armor. The yoke around its armored neck made a sudden polite chiming noise, and then the alien surged forward so quickly the human eye couldn't follow it. One moment it was standing just behind the throne, and the next it was towering over the cringing security head, its great clawed hands on his bare shoulders. The courtiers nearest it surged back as far as the pressure of the crowd would allow, but the Grendel paid them no heed. Its claws sank deep into the man's flesh, and thick runnels of blood coursed down his colorless flesh. He opened his mouth to scream, and the alien opened its mouth and bit the man's face off. Skin and eyes and nose and mouth disappeared as the alien jerked back its great head, leaving only a shattered, bloody skull, screaming horribly with the security man's voice. The alien chewed and swallowed, and then leaned forward again, thrusting its grinning jaws into the man's chest with brutal force. The sternum dove in, cracking like paper, and the Grendel alien's head burrowed in the man's chest, going after the heart like a pig hunting truffles. The man's arms waved wildly for a few moments, and then they fell to his sides and lay still. And Frederick Hill, once head of Starport Security, hung limply in the alien's grasp as it chewed thoughtfully, savoring the flavor. The yoke around its neck chimed, but the Grendel didn't respond. The yoke chimed again, and the Grendel dropped the body carelessly into the blood-soaked snow and moved unhurriedly back to resume its position just behind the Iron Throne. Steaming hot blood dripped thickly from its grinning jaws and ran slowly down its gleaming silicon armor. In the snow before the throne, Hill's body lay in a crumpled heap, like a broken, discarded toy that no one wanted to play with anymore. Silence moved in close beside Frost. He could feel the anger boiling within her, ready to spill over at a moment's provocation. Her whole career had been built around killing aliens before they got the chance to kill people. He put a warning hand on her arm. It was as tense as coiled steel. She turned her head and gave him a hard look, and he took his hand away. Frost was an investigator and had no time for human weaknesses like compassion. Her anger was purely professional. The court murmured among itself, looking from the Grendel to the gutted body and back again, impressed by the savagery of the kill, if not the quality of the control the Empress had over it. The many lessons involved in the man's death had not been missed by any of the courtiers. Silence shared a significant glance with Stelmach, but they both kept their peace. Those courtiers nearest the body looked down at the open wounds steaming in the chill air and tried to back away a little farther. But the crowd was packed in tight behind them, and there was nowhere for them to go. Nobody wanted to look at the alien. The Empress smiled at them all.
Cute, isn't he? Table manners aren't up to much, but he's only young. Really little more than a baby. Imagine what he'll be like when he comes of age. Imagine an army of him, spilling across a battlefield like an endless wave of slaughter. Unstoppable shock troops leaving nothing behind them but mountains of dead and oceans of blood. I'm quite looking forward to it. The work into controlling the Grendel aliens more perfectly is going well. Soon we'll have yokes for every sleeper in the vaults, and then we'll send them out against the aliens who attacked us here, or anyone else who threatens us. Captain Silence, you haven't finished your report. Tell the court what you discovered on the Wolfling world.
Silence, Frost, and Stelmach took it in turns to tell what they'd found in the vast caverns deep beneath the frozen surface of the Wolfling world, once also known as Hayden, home to the augmented supermen, the Hayden Men. They told of the thousands of sleeping Hayden Men who rose from their long death-like sleep and walked out of their tomb, glorious and powerful, an army of cyborg warriors who once tried to overthrow humanity and only narrowly failed. They told of the rebels who woke them, the outlaw Owen Deathstalker, the pirate Hazel Dark, the bounty hunter Ruby Journey, and the legendary professional rebel Jack Random. They told of the defeat of the Dauntless's forces, but none of them mentioned the Lord High Dram's presence or his death at the hands of another legend, the original Deathstalker, thought dead for centuries, but now returned for vengeance against the Empire that betrayed and hounded him. Silence and the others had been told previously, in no uncertain terms, that Dram was not to be mentioned. Given their current situation, Silence and Frost and Stelmach were happy to be flexible with the truth. The court continued to murmur among itself, despite darting glares from the Empress, as the courtiers reacted to names like Jack Random and the original Deathstalker. They were also troubled by the reemergence of Owen Deathstalker, outlawed by the Empress for no good reason, who had evaded all her armies and now looked to be leading the new rebellion. And they really didn't like the idea of a new army of Haydenmen massing to attack the Empire again. The only reason the Haydenmen weren't still officially listed as the enemies of humanity was because the rogue AIs of Shub were even nastier. The Empress finally sat back and let them mutter for a while, before reclaiming their attention with her amplified voice.
Let's not all panic just yet, boys and girls. The Haydenmen are a long way away and only newly awakened. It will be some time yet before they're in any position to pose a real threat to us. The man claiming to be Jack Random could be nothing more than a double. Rebel propaganda to draw people to their cause. The man himself is probably long dead.
She stopped suddenly as Bibi Chojiro stepped gracefully out of the crowd to stand before the throne. Bibi bowed gracefully, and the Empress fixed her with an icy glare.
This had better be good, Chojiro, and extremely relevant.
With all due respect, Your Majesty, it had come to us through normally reliable channels that Jack Random had been captured by Empire forces some time back, and then escaped.
Then you were misinformed. We never had him. If we had, he would never have been allowed to escape. Is that clear? Good. Now don't interrupt us again, or we'll have the Grendel open you up so we can all see what little girls are made of.
Clan Chojiro has no wish to appear rude or impertinent, Your Majesty. We are merely trying to ascertain the facts. The Haydenman ship that brought the rebels here was very real and twice as impressive, implying that not only are the Haydenmen and the rebels working together, but that the augmented men are already so well prepared that they can drop in on us any time they like. Who is to say a fleet of these ships is not already setting out from Hayden to try humanity's strength again?
You're a real cheerful sort to have around, Chojiro. If the Haydenmen are getting ready for a comeback, that is all the more reason to support my military build-up and stop whining about your tax bills, isn't it? Anyone else want to add anything before we move on? Bearing in mind it had better be pretty damn good, or we'll keep you all here till your eyeballs freeze solid.
If you'll allow me, I have a few words to say.
Valentine Wolf stepped forward to stand beside Bibi, who gave him a brief sidelong glance and then stepped a little farther away. Valentine gave her a dazzling smile anyway and nodded to the Empress.
Lovely court, Lionstone. Very bracing. Could do with a few penguins, but I like the snow. It goes with my complexion. And now then, I had heard, through various reliable and only slightly corrupt sources, that your consort, the Lord Hydram, had been a part of Captain Silence's expedition to the Wolfling World, and that, regrettably, he met his end there, and is, in fact, quite definitely dead. Given that no one seems to have seen him at court or at your side for some time, perhaps you could reassure us all as to his present whereabouts and well-being.
Of course. Dram was never there. He has been on Golgotha all along, undertaking some important business for me.
I'm sure we're all very relieved to hear that. But where might the Lord Hydram be right now?
Right here. At my side, as he always is.
She gestured smoothly, a hologram shield disappeared, and there was Dram standing beside her, between Cardinal Kasser and the throne. Kasser didn't actually jump, but he looked as though he would have liked to, and did move away a step before he could stop himself. Dram, warrior prime of the Empire, stood at Lionstone's side in his jet-black robes and battle armor, his familiar, handsome face perhaps just a little cold and distant. He nodded calmly to the assembled courtiers, who stared silently back. There had never been any love lost between Lionstone's right hand and the company of lords. Valentine studied Dram for a long moment, then looked at Bibi, shrugged, and stepped back into the crowd. No point in playing out a losing hand. Bibi Chojiro inclined her head to Dram and to the Empress, and stepped back to rejoin Investigator Razor. Silence and Frost and Stelmach looked at each other.
Now that is interesting. If that's Dram, who did we see die on the Wolfling world? The real Dram? Is this a clone, or was it the clone who came with us while the real Dram stayed behind here?
I don't know, but I have a strong feeling asking those sorts of questions could prove to be really bad for your health.
What are you saying? I can't understand either of you when you whisper like that. What are we going to do?
Silence and Frost looked at each other. Without realizing, they'd fallen into the near telepathic contact again, their thoughts jumping back and forth like conversation, which should have been impossible with all the S-blockers Lionstone insisted on for court gatherings. Something else for them to discuss when they were safely alone.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to keep our mouths shut until the Empress tells us what to say. If she says that's Dram, then that's Dram, right?
Fine by me.
Right.
But Stelmach didn't look at all happy about it. There was a sudden disturbance among the courtiers as someone moved forward through the crush, and then a man dressed in the very height of fashion stepped out of the crowd to stand challengingly before the Iron Throne. He wore a long golden frock coat and leather boots that rose halfway up his thighs. His hair was long bronzed strands, and his face was blindingly fluorescent. The thick silver medallion hanging over his breast proclaimed him an elected member of Parliament. He glanced quickly about him for the holo cameras he knew were somewhere around, even if he couldn't see them, and drew himself up proudly. Like all politicians, he understood the importance of putting on a good show for an audience. And half the Empire would be watching today.
Your Majesty, I really must protest. Information has come to me from a private but valued source who must of course remain anonymous that verifies everything the Lord Wolf had to say. The Lord High Dram is dead. He died on the Wolfling world, cut down by the original Death Stalker himself. The man at your side is at best an imposter, at worst a clone you're attempting to fool us into accepting. Well, I for one am not fooled. I must insist that this person submit to a gene test here and now. We cannot permit a clone to stand as consort to your Majesty.
We? Said Dram. And who might this we be?
I represent a number of my colleagues, and I trust I have the backing of every loyal man and woman here. We have a right to know the truth.
Lionstone leaned forward on her throne, her face calm and quite composed.
Your face is not familiar to us. You are...
I'm Richard Scott, newly elected member for Grey Lake East. I won my seat on a platform of reform for truth and justice in government. It seems only fitting that I begin my fight here at court.
Lionstone nodded and leaned back in her throne.
I might have known. There's nothing more pompous and impertinent than a newly elected official. Dram, you deal with this.
Dram nodded, his cold, dark eyes fixed on Scott, who was looking a little perturbed. Whatever answer he'd expected to his challenge, this wasn't it. No anger or denial or bluster, just a calm indifference from the Empress and a cold, calculating look from her consort. Scott began to wonder if he'd made a mistake. His colleagues had been loud enough in their support earlier, but now they stood silent in the crowd, while he stood alone before the Iron Throne. Dram stepped forward, and Scott had to fight down an impulse to step back. He had to appear strong, resolute. Dram came to a halt, standing between Scott and the throne. His sudden smile was cold as death.
The Empress has already stated before this assembled court that I am the real Lord High Dram. By challenging that, you challenge her word. You have, in effect, called her a liar. And that is a dueling offense. A matter of honor.
I represent Lionstone in this matter. Find another to stand for you, or you must defend yourself here and now. Scott paled as he saw the trap he'd fallen into. No one would help him now. The field of honor was sacrosanct.
Your Majesty, I protest. Members of Parliament are by tradition exempt from the code duello.
Normally, yes. But you insulted the Empress in front of her own court. That much insult outweighs tradition. Scott didn't turn to look behind him. He knew the faces of the courtiers would be closed against him. He raised his hands to show they were empty.
I don't have a sword.
One of the guards who'd brought in the late head of Starport Security stepped forward, at Dram's gesture, and offered Scott his sword. The MP accepted it as though it was his death warrant, which, in a way, it was. He was no duelist, hadn't drawn a sword in anger since his student days, and Dram was the warrior prime. If this was Dram, of course. Scott hefted the sword once, getting the feel of it. It was a good blade, well balanced. He started to cry. Not a breakdown or anything dramatic. He'd be damned if he'd give them the satisfaction. Just a few tears running down his cheeks. He knew he was going to die. This was an execution, not a duel. He couldn't remember whether he told his wife he loved her when he left that morning. He hoped he had. And he'd had that specially imported marble come for the forecourt. She wouldn't have a clue what to do with it. So many things left undone. He shook his head briefly. None of that mattered now. It was too late for anything but Dram and him and their two swords. He looked straight at Dram, and though tears were still running down his cheeks, his voice was cold and hard and determined.
Let's do it.
Dram stepped forward, lifting his sword, and Scott went to meet him. They circled each other a moment, and then Dram launched a blistering attack with all his strength behind it. Scott parried as best he could, but after only half a dozen blows, his sword was knocked out of his hand. He watched it sail through the air and land in the snow a dozen feet away. He looked back at Dram, held his head high, and tried to keep his mouth from trembling. There was nowhere he could run, and maybe a good showing would buy him a reprieve from the Empress. But Dram didn't even look back at her. He raised his sword and brought it flashing down to sink deep into Scott's right shoulder, like a forester taking his axe to a stubborn tree. The impact drove Scott to his knees, a surprised sound exploding from his slack mouth. Dram jerked his sword free, and blood fountained from the great wound, spattering Scott's face in the snow around him. Dram struck at him again and again, avoiding a killing blow, his sword rising and falling with relentless precision. Scott tried to intercept some of the blows with his arms, the sword slicing skin and meat away as the blade rebounded from the bones. But then one of the blows took off his left hand, and after that, he just crouched there in the snow, cradling the bloody stump to his chest. He cried out constantly at the pain, but made no move to avoid any of the blows. Finally, he fell forward into the crimson snow and lay still. It was obvious to all that the man was dead, but Dram continued to hack at the body like an axeman cutting wood, the body jumping and shuddering under the rain of blows. The courtiers watched in horrified silence. Lionstone leaned forward in her throne to get a better view, smiling widely. The maid stirred restlessly at the foot of her throne, excited by the smell of blood in the air, watching the body jump and shudder with her unblinking insect eyes.